Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you'd like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about assessing blame. And you know, that's kind of a human nature thing to do when things go a little bit sideways. We want to blame, well, everybody but us, so that it doesn't look like we were, well, less than perfect. Yes. Oh, yes, by the way, thank you all for being here. I see lots of people wishing me a Happy New Year, and to you, too. Happy New Year to everyone a lot of the world. I know this is an international show, of course, global. A lot of us celebrated the New Year just recently, and this is our first show of the New Year. Yes. And to those of you who are celebrating later in the year, Happy New Year then, too, and may you have healthy, successful New Years with everything you'd want. Yes. Thank you. And thank you, yes, thank you all for wishing that for me. Yes, I hope so. So, let's talk about assessing blame in the new year. Because it's something that people try all the time, isn't it? Yes. Even if nothing's really gone wrong exactly, but they want to show that they're on top of things. Ever had that? Yes, our participants. So, let's talk about within our context, the context of a mediation, a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, a workshop, a seminar. Mm-hmm. Within our context, what type of blame gets assessed? What gets, well, passed around? What kind of blame do we usually see that people are, well, trying to pass off on someone else? Mm-hmm. Of course, we as leaders would never do such a thing. Because we're good examples at all times, aren't we? And that would be a bad example, to try to blame someone else for our, well, sometimes we make a mistake now, don't we? Yeah. To try to blame someone else for something that we possibly should have had control of and we're not going to fix, right? Yeah. But the main thing that happens when there's assessing blame, because we don't, is that our participants try it, don't they? Yeah. So what kind of blame do we often see get assessed and passed around, so to speak? Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of consensus. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to kind of clump the types of blames together. I'm going to call this breaching the deadline. Haven't made it. The deadline passed and we didn't make it type blame. Mm-hmm. So what type of deadline, what type of timing blame do we see? Mm-hmm. Hannah and others, in fact, a lot of people, are talking about blame when we haven't completed on time, right? Blame for delay, I'm going to call that. Haven't completed it on time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's talk about the various types of blame for this, for the deadline, and then let's talk about a solution. Because we are practical people, right? And this is a show, I mean, it's very nice and like that. We like getting together once a week. But we like to know what to do about things. Not just the theory. Not just what it is that we think about. But what to do about it. Yeah, we're practical people. Yes, we've got agreement. Yes, so thank you all for being here. Thank you for all your participation. Let's see. Shogo says that there's blame for the deadline when information is not available, so you cannot proceed. Good point, Shogo and others, that information is not available, so you cannot proceed. And somebody has to take the blame for that because they didn't get it in, right? Yeah. Yes, this is true, too. A lot of people are talking about what I'm going to call subcontractors. Doug and others say that the breach of deadline blame goes to lack of control over the subcontractors, and somebody was supposed to keep track of them. Yeah. A subcontractor would be somebody who was supposed to do something who's outside the group. We tend to think of subcontractors, in the United States at least, in more of a construction type way because, you know, there's a plumber, there's an electrician, there's a person that does the plasterboard. But really, a lot of groups, we have subcontractors. There's somebody who's supposed to do, for example, the website, right? Yeah. Something to do with computers, something to do with accounting, something to do with reaching out, some sort of, you know what I mean. There's somebody outside our group, because otherwise they'd be a participant who didn't quite make it. And they were supposed to do something according to a deadline. And we're going to pass around the blame of who was supposed to be watching them, making them do it. Yes. Yes, a lot of you have had this with the website. I confess. I must confess that I see this a lot with, let's do a solution right away to this one. That I see this a lot with outside web contractors and people who make videos and things like that. I mean, they come and they do it, right? They take the footage. But then you have a deadline for using it, for example, and they're not making it. I secretly, and it's not much of a secret now, is it? I know that this happens a lot, kind of, at least in the United States it does. I don't know about other places. Yeah, this is a global show. We're getting quite a few people saying that all over the world that's a true statement, that the web people tend not to get things in a timely manner. And I must confess that I give them a fake deadline earlier than the drop-dead deadline. Because when they blow the supposed deadline, I can get kind of excited so that they make the real deadline. Yeah. Because in my experience, they will blow the deadline. And that is just my experience from dealing with these people. And I'm afraid that is a preconceived notion when I deal with a new subcontractor, so to speak, like that. I tell them an earlier deadline. I do. And I have yet to have one actually make it. Yeah. Yes, a lot of you live in countries and do business in countries that are not the United States. And I must confess, the United States has kind of a thing about timeliness, punctuality, especially some parts. And yes, I'm going to admit to that. A lot of people are saying that's generational. I suppose it is. And in some parts of the world, a deadline's kind of soft. So if you know that you live in a part of the world where the deadline's kind of soft and you have an actual deadline, because you're probably dealing with an American country or a government or something, yeah, just move the deadline up. Is it cheating? Yeah, I don't know if it's cheating or not, but it's practical. Yeah. And it's a necessity on a regular basis to tell people a deadline that's earlier than the actual, what we call in this country, a drop-dead deadline, where you really must have it. Because the chances of it going soft are really good. Yeah. So that's my deadline. Yeah. Lack of control over the subcontractors type thought. And another talking of lack of decisiveness, delay, and a missed deadline. They can't agree, right? Deadline's getting up. We all know it. Still can't agree. Just they lack decisiveness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. People are saying when you have lack of decisiveness, you as leader need to make the decision. Maybe. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the group. It depends on the complexity of the issues. It kind of depends on how much they must buy in, the participants must work towards it, and therefore you need to have it be their idea, right? Yeah. When I have real lack of decisiveness and I can see that nobody wants to come out and give an opinion, make a decision, sometimes it's because all of the decisions are kind of hard, right? That's when I actually resort to the anonymous ballot type vote. Yeah, we kind of have a vote on a piece of paper that's thrown into a hat, right? So that we can get an idea if we really do have consensus, but people are scared to say so. Sometimes you have that with a group. They are either very reticent because they're not of equal level in the room. You have that with businesses, especially with teams and groups that have been chosen by level of employment and not so much by personal interests. Does that make sense? And what they do and say they feel impacts their job, impacts their livelihood, right? It makes people very reticent to say one way or another. So I'm big on the anonymous vote when I've got that. I recognize that that's the problem. We're not going to get anywhere if nobody can speak up, if nobody can really come out in favor of one way or the other because they're scared what the other people are going to come out. And they want to be on the right side. You know what I mean? Yes, exactly. People want to be on the winning side, right? Yeah. So I take the anonymous vote. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea. Several people, in fact, more than several, are asking if, as leader, because I count the vote, I make it go a certain way because I think that's the way it should go, even if the vote didn't exactly come out the majority way. The answer is no. Now, I will fake a deadline because of necessity, but don't fake the vote because you won't get buy-in like that. You've got to start from there and then work whatever is the majority and then work around from that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because you need the participants to be in favor of the direction we're going and not either kind of balk, right? Kind of, I guess act against it is not exactly true, but not be enthusiastic and sincere in their efforts, or plain ordinary quit or something. You know what I mean? It needs to be the consensus of the group to go forward. Yeah, it's important for the group dynamic. You can't just make a unilateral decision as the leader unless, and this is the it depends, they really, really, really want you to. Some groups, I'm going to say some cultures too, some business cultures, not individual family type culture, but really business culture, want the leader to really lead and tell them what to do. They really do. Now, in the United States, we tend to have a group dynamic that includes everybody's opinion, right? Because we're big on that. And so that's what I usually do. But sometimes you've got a group, an issue, where the people really, really, really want you to take control, want you to lead, want you to tell them what to do. Just tell me what to do. Well, just tell me what to do is valid, right? Yeah. Tell me what to do and we'll do it. Okay. So sometimes they don't want to vote. They don't want to take a side. They want to just be led. This is what we're going to do. Nothing wrong with it, but it has to be the right group to do that. Otherwise, you won't get buy-in, and they won't work for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's lack of decisiveness. Uh-huh. The blaming for the breach of the deadline, Eric and others are saying that sometimes it's because we underestimated the time for the project, the time the project would need for completion, underestimated the time the project would need for completion. And then people pass around blame. You didn't tell me how long it was going to take. Therefore, I can't stay till the end. Told us this was going to take a month of meetings. But now it's expanded. It's your fault I can't stay, right? Yeah, passing blame. So what's the solution to all of this? Yeah, we talked about the lack of control over the subcontractors, the lack of decisiveness, right? But really, yeah, exactly. A lot of people are saying that the way, and we're having really consensus, that the solution to the breach of deadline, passing of blame, is to not do it. Right. There's really no excuse for breaching a deadline that you know that you have, especially if it's an external one that truly must be met. Something needs to be filed by a certain time. I do a lot of work where something needs to get on a ballot. Something needs to be put into the rules that are being changed or being thought about by a certain, like an annual meeting. Something needs to get on the agenda, right? Yeah. So these types of things, contract negotiations for employment salary, right? A lot of times I've got people who are in unions and their contract for employment comes up at a certain time and we need to negotiate what the new terms are going to be by that time period. I guess it's because I am very time conscious, very conscious of when the deadlines are, very well organized, I guess. I've seen people blow it. I think there's no excuse for it. Really isn't. You know in advance, usually lots in advance, what the deadline is. You make a decision as to whether or not you need to up it for subcontractors. But the group should know when the drop-dead date is, and we will work towards it and be in plenty of time. Because the leader is a nervous type, that would be me, and I want it to be there a week ahead of deadline, is my goal. I'm not one of these 10th-hour people. I just don't like it. I can't do it. I don't like the nail-biters. I like it to be all in and done and proofread. And if you do it at the last minute, and this is my own soapbox, as you can see, if you do it at the last minute, that's when mistakes get made. That's when you see the typo that changes the entire meaning. Because everybody got tired. And they just went, yeah, to it. And leader got tired and didn't read it really for spelling and for typos and like that. Yeah, needs to be done, needs to be proofed, looked at once again, thought of very carefully, because I do a lot of law changing, law writing, thought of very carefully as to repercussions, maybe even sent around to other groups to get their input, yeah? Because a third set of eyes is always a good thing. Sometimes you get to a group, the process is taking a while, and you kind of get too close to it so that you can't see the flaws anymore. So you need some outsider, some third party impartial, or maybe a third party interested, to take a look at it and say, whoa, do you know that if you read it straight, just read it as an objective observer, you know what that says? And you go, oh, whoops, yeah, because that happens, because you're too close. You know what it means, and you think what it says is what it means, but you should always have time to give it to somebody outside the group who hasn't worked on it for a year and have them look at it and tell you what they think it means, because it might not be the same. And you go, oh, my. Yes, I've had to change like one word in a written law that makes the meaning so much more clear and less likely to crazy court interpretation. Yeah, because they get to court, they pick it apart word for word. Yeah, go, oh my goodness, you're absolutely right. We were too close. Mm-hmm. You need to have it all done before the deadline so that you can go and ask other people about it, so that you can sleep on it. Yes, I know some of you are 10th hourers, and you say that you work the best and your groups work the best under pressure. It's a style. My style is get it in early, let's all sleep on it and think about it and send it around and make it perfect before the deadline. Yeah, I really am. I'm real big on that. So I control of the process. Yes, and that's the key. That's the secret. There is no secret. You keep control of the process. Okay, I'm really busy, and I've got a lot going at the same time, right? I must confess that I have an extremely competent manager who keeps control of the process. She's very, very competent, and she's got a whole computer scheduling, would that be what it's called? She's not here, so she's not nodding at me. Computer workup for each and every group, each and every negotiation, mediation, alternative dispute resolution, workshop, seminar, whatever it is, each client has their own complete computer input along with kind of reminders, the ding, because they show up to me that this is coming up in, well, she gives me plenty of time because she knows I like it. 3 weeks, right? 2 months, whatever it is, if it's real complicated, we need to get it done now so that we can be done. Did I mention sleep on it, have third eyes look at it, and like that? Yeah. So you need somebody, even if it's not you, it might be you as the leader if you have the time and the ability. I don't know if I have the computer ability anymore, but I'm very, very well organized, but you do run out of time, right? And quite frankly, if you're in business and you've got a reputation, you do similar types of law, similar types of groups, right? And you don't want them to accidentally kind of meld together in your mind. You need it on the computer screen with the little tick time deadline things, when this has to be done, when this has to be done. Yeah, people are calling that a timeline. Yes, it is. When you say timeline to me, I picture something that is actually written out on like a whiteboard or in a send-around manner to keep people encouraged that we're going forward. But you could call it a timeline if you want, but it's much more deadline organized, right? Yeah. And it is not sent to the participants. It is sent to me as leader, so I can tell each group about it. Yeah. It's sent to my computer. Actually, it's even sent to my phone. But it's sent to me as leader, the computer reminders and stuff, so that I can then tell the groups about it. Even forward the reminder. I mean, it's not a secret, but it's really internal process record, internal to the leader, so that we can all really stay on the same page and really not blow our deadlines. And then we won't have to pass blame, right? Right. Yeah. Yes, this is a very good point. One of the ways to prevent the participants from breaching the deadline because they didn't get the information, they didn't make the call, they didn't, and then they're going to pass the blame? No. You need to, if you've got a bunch of subgroups, of committees, even if you don't, even if it's one group, or you have what I'm going to call subcontractors, the outsiders, right? You need to have a fixed reporting time. When they have to report to you how they're doing, right? Yeah. A lot of you are advocating a weekly report from everybody. How we're doing, that goes to everybody. And exactly what it is that you've done during the week. That's the ticket, yeah? Pardon me. pardon me, what it is that we've accomplished. This will also tell you if you've got somebody or some group, some team, that is accidentally going sideways on you. Yeah, did you ever have that? They think they've got it. Honest to God, they think they've got it. But you don't think so. It's just the darn thing's gone sideways. They've kind of, they think they're following the instructions, but they're not, right? And it's because they're unclear in their mind. Yes, thank you. Don and others are saying that it's not just that they're unclear in their mind. It's because they're meeting as subcommittees, as teams, not with the whole group. And they're convincing each other of something that was not the original intent. Yeah, they've discussed it amongst themselves, and they've kind of gone sideways a little bit, and they're sure. So you need to have a regular report of progress from everybody, including the web people. Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny? It seems to be all over the world. The web people, the website, and the video and the media people, they're all kind of, well, they're artists, let's face it. It's the artistic temperament, I suppose. And, yeah. It's kind of like, yes, we're artists. Like, really, what on earth is that? Well, we're artists, yeah. You have to keep track of what they're doing, too, because you don't want them to put something odd on your website, right? Yeah? And I've had that several times. You look at the Recipe for Peace Now website. It's kind of, a lot of you have been here a long time. Yeah, a lot of you have been with this show since its inception, and we've been doing it for years. And you've noticed it's evolved over the years. Yeah, isn't that fun? And it's just because, you know, different board members give different opinions. It's all very strange. But, yeah, it kind of evolves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you have to keep track of that. But anyway, so you have to keep track of the process. And the main thing is people have to feel comfortable to ask questions, right? And if you see somebody's going off the rails, you got to remember the civility rules and not actually say you're going off the rails if you've gone insane. No. You have to be nice, polite and steer them back towards the right direction. Yeah. What other kind of blame do we have besides the breaching of deadlines? Due to all kinds of lack of control, lack of information, lack of completion, lack of proper time estimate. I always estimate big, by the way. When I start out and I tell people about how much time I think it's going to take, and we've discussed this before, recipeforpeacenow.com, all the prior shows are archived on it, yes. I'm in favor of kind of estimating big, because if we get it done faster, then we're really proud of ourselves. Yeah, pardon me. Now let's talk about other kinds of breach, other kinds of passing of blame, right? Because otherwise we're not only not going to make the menu, the recipes, we're not going to make our time slot. The next one I think that's most popular up is a passing of blame because of an economic overrun. It costs more than we thought it would, yeah? And then people try to pass the blame for how come, especially if we're doing corporate or some sort of an organization with a budget, and there are, for lack of a better word, overseers. There's somebody that's going to have a fit because we ran over budget, right? And, of course, we know what our budget is, hopefully, mm-hmm. And we might have to ask for an extension. And we might, at the beginning, talk to the, I'm going to call it supervisory department, that has the budget strings. We might even talk to them before we engage the group and participants as leader and give them an idea about how much we think it's going to take. Figuring kind of big, in all truth and honesty, so we don't overrun. So they have an idea, and don't pick a number out of thin air, primarily because that's the excess that they've got. You know what I mean? The budget people are kind of, you know, people are calling it in conflict. I'm going to be nicer and say not exactly in conflict, but it's their job to keep costs down, right? Right. And if they might give you an unreasonably low figure. You should tell them that if you, in your experience, it is unreasonably low, right off the bat, because you don't want to have the passing of blame later for why we went over budget. And sometimes the reason we went over budget is the budget was ridiculous to begin with. Don't begin things with that kind of a budget. Especially when you have some experience about how much it's going to take. Tell people right off that you can't. That is just too low. We're not going to make it. You're going to have to refigure it. Yeah. So that's, yeah, economic overrun blame. Yeah. Linda and others are talking about this. Sometimes there's blame and overrun because the cost changed during the time interval. Yeah, sometimes the price changes on you. The cost change, especially if something is fairly long term, right? Yeah, the costs of doing business change. Mm-hmm. Sometimes also the people you're dealing with get the idea that you're a big organization and they can charge you more, right? When they find out we... Yeah, it's kind of like gouging. Well, I suppose it is gouging. I mean, let's face it. But that happens because of human nature, right? Yeah. And sometimes you fail to secure the funding, as Suki and others are saying. The donor didn't. The grant didn't come through. And somebody wants to blame somebody else for why the didn't happened. Yeah. Didn't get it. Aren't gonna. Your fault. Yeah. So there's passing of blame for that. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to ask the why, especially of a donor, right? So that we know maybe it's because of something that they perceive that's not true. It's just a perception, and they've gotten kind of, yeah, I suppose offended would be a word. Suki and others say sometimes donors get accidentally offended, right? Or scared in some way, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Elizabeth and others are talking, and Jury are talking about outside funding loss, right? That the organization and some sort of funding organization that's been funding your group fails, right? Yeah. Or gives the money to someone else, yeah? It gives the money to someone else, yeah? Yeah, these are all areas where people try to pass blame. The answer is to get to the why. Mm-hmm. And also to not have everybody be in charge of talking to the donors and writing the grant and like that. That's kind of a specialty act that needs to be led by the leader. Even if we are not the actual person making the ask or writing the grant. I've got a professional grant writer on my team when I deal with clients if they're seeking to have funding from outside sources. In the United States and in other countries too, there's lots of charities, lots of corporate branches of funding, right? And they need to have a formal grant proposal written. Now, we are undoubtedly one of the most competent and wonderful groups, but that's a specialty, grant writing. It really is. It has to look right. It has to have the right wording. It has to have the right feel to it to give the funder, the organization we're asking the grant from, confidence that you know what on earth you're doing and that you're the right one to fund and that it won't be embarrassing to them later. That's a real specialty. I have a professional grant writer. No one else is supposed to help with that, right? They're not supposed to send in, I don't know, requests, letters, make phone calls. It's being done. Be calm. Not until I tell you to, right? You have to keep control over the economics. Yes. Yes, people are talking about the rate went up as you went along. And that's why you're low on funding, because you depended on a certain amount of payment, right? Well, first of all, you might have a breach of contract. Let's say it's not a contract, an actual contract. Okay, I'm going to give an example that I see. It's not really a corporate one so much, although you see it with big corporations and small businesses, for example. You know I'm a Rotarian because I talk about this occasionally. And Rotary is an international service organization that goes all over the world helping people. Helping people who we really can't get anything in return from, right? It is truly an act of selfless service. The motto of Rotary is service above self. And you help people who cannot return the favor to you, yeah? And so sometimes we go into areas, and if you live in this area, this is a global show. Don't be offended by this. And I know a lot of you are in Rotary clubs all over the world, because they are, and you see this too, because I'm already getting agreement, because you know what I'm going to say. And Rotary makes a deal beforehand to send people to a certain area to, for example, help to eradicate polio, which is the one that I saw personally, but dig wells and things like that too. You go into areas of the world, and because the Rotarians come personally to actually administer the drops to the baby, and sometimes they're even local people, the Rotarians, but they're not local to that village. It's out of their way. It's rural. And, pardon me, you need to set up like housing for the Rotarians and food and a place for them to set up their shop to give the vaccine to the babies and like that. And sometimes when you get there, because the local people don't see too much commerce, right? The price of the services goes up. And you have to pay it because you've promised to give the vaccine. People are already going to line up on a certain day. And so price of the room goes up a whole bunch. Well, you negotiate and like that, but we all know that you're going to give them some extra money. The price changed. Now, was it during a long interval? No. The price changed when you got there and you were kind of and everybody knew it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does this make these people bad people? Well, I guess they're not too altruistic, but it's human nature. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of account for that, especially, well, in all kinds of places in the world that happens. Yeah. Especially in poorer areas where they're really kind of, they're not going to see anything that good for a while. Not until next year, maybe. Yeah, when you come again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So the solution is, what's the solution to passing blame because of economic shortfall? Mm-hmm. Sherita and others are saying just overestimate when you're asking for phones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, Cheryl and others, are talking about creating an emergency reserve. I like that. I kind of figure big-ish when I'm asking for funds, yeah. But I do explain the concept of things change. There are oftentimes unexpected expenses that are incurred. And let's make an emergency reserve. Yeah. I don't like to call it petty cash. People call it petty cash. Petty cash, to me, indicates a small amount of money. Petty cash is where you get lunch for the group from, right? I'm talking about a real emergency reserve fund so that we can, if we need to hire a person to help us, we in some way, even a like a clerical person, right? We'll have the funds for it. Yeah. Not everything can be handled by an intern, right? Yeah. So I do. I'm with Jarita and Cheryl and other people that estimate high and create an emergency reserve. Dorbetta and Loudon and others are talking about that you need to explain to the group the potential that you're going to have payments made and required before you get involved. I'm very upfront when I start a group about going to take some time, effort, and we're going to have to raise some funds if I feel that that's true, that we're going to have to raise some funds. I think that you should tell people saying that it makes people run away. Well, all right, I'm going to go for the it depends again. It kind of depends on how devoted they are to getting to a solution, why they're there, right? Yeah. I think that's true, too. Loudon says it also depends on whether or not there's a lot of similar groups in your space. And so they'll go for the one that seems less hard and quit yours. It is kind of a marketing thing. It is, you have to think about it with your group, right? Yeah. Because it might indeed be an it depends, because you don't want to scare people off, but you want them to have a good idea of what's going to be needed, because they have to kind of make time for it and not have to pass the blame later. You didn't tell me, right? I hate that word. You didn't tell me it was going to cost money, take time, take effort. Yeah. Yes, be made public is one of the things people have filled in the blank. And I think that's going to be our next way of passing blame, because that's the next one that people are talking about. And I'm going to call it passing blame for a media leak, right? Somebody went outside the group and told what we're doing. Now, is what we're doing illegal? In the United States, probably not. But in other countries, sometimes things are illegal by the government that are right by humans. And we want to change the law. I think so. That's true in the United States, too. We want to change the law, so we're working towards having something changed. Yeah. Usually get into trouble in the United States. Usually, I suppose, is a bad word, but you don't. We have freedom of speech, thank the Lord, in the United States. You don't usually get into trouble for trying to change the law. It's your right to try to talk about it and see if you can. Pardon me, unless you actually do damage, which is different. Like the protests that turn kind of ugly and violent. We have that occasionally. That's why you need a permit to protest. You actually need a permit in the United States to bring your group onto the streets and block traffic and like that. It's not that you can't get it. It's that the police and everybody want to know in case it turns kind of less than civil, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's for Media Leak. Sometimes I've seen a group that's talking about applying for a permit and talking about a media blitz, a public blitz, really, and someone leaks it to the media ahead of time so that the officials are scared to issue the permit. There's a lot of public outcry, right? Yeah. And then opposing groups come the same day to oppose the get-together, to oppose the assembly, right? Yeah. So that's one way that I've seen it leaking to the media that causes kind of a mess, deliberately, not as an accident, yeah. And so the blame gets passed about who did it, right? Gail and others are talking, and I've seen this one too. I've seen this in, I guess it's like corporate espionage, right? That some sort of proprietary information got leaked to the media or to the competition, to the opposition, right? And it gives them an advantage. I have seen blame passed and media leakage, especially during negotiation, oftentimes over price of a company, for example, yeah, and somebody leaks the information about the bidding that's going on, for lack of a better word. Very, very important to keep control of that. Mm-hmm. How to keep control of it? I think if it's super sensitive and it's proprietary, or it has to do with negotiation of sale or something like that, I think the group should be kept small. And not everybody should be in on the real nitty-gritty details of the negotiation. I like to deal only with the principles for that. Yeah. Because that's not a group dynamic type thing. That's proprietary, right? You have to decide that. You can make a key person group and not tell everybody who's interested exactly the details while we're working it out. Yeah, a key person group. I do it all the time with corporate negotiation, right? Yeah. There may be interested parties, not saying there aren't, but there are certain key people that must be there. And they are the ones that need to keep it proprietary, right? Yeah. What other kinds of media leaks do we have? A lot of times I see some media leaks, and so do you. I can see Robert and Vicky and others are talking about media leaks having to do with people being too fast to blog, too fast to report on the process, right? Yeah. I know Sonia and others, quite a few of you advocate confiscation of devices. So you can't do it as you're sitting there and just blog about something or text while you're, before you even have time to think about what the repercussions would be, right? Yeah. I do indeed enforce that when we're in person. I enforce it even when we're on Skype. Don't want you looking down and doing that. Very important to have people not report on the spur of the moment. They need to think about what it is they're saying. And maybe whatever their internal opinion was has changed in 3 minutes. But the other's already out there permanently for someone to use, right? Yeah. And then blame gets passed around. You told. We have a rule about not telling. It's not because we're doing something that secret, usually. It's because it's the process. And the process is messy. And it doesn't need to be reported on piece by piece. We'll tell you when we're done. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a biggie too. Blame, passing blame for a media leak. Sometimes even in the United States we have this, but especially in other countries where freedom of speech is not as free.
Mm-hmm.
But even here, people don't want to have their identity divulged. Yeah. They don't want you to know that they're secretly working with this group to make a change that, for example, their employer would not be in favor of. Yeah. Sometimes I have people that I call upon as experts, for example, who don't want to be members of the groups and don't want me to tell who they were giving me the advice or sending me to somebody who wouldn't mind being identified, right? You have to respect that or you'll have no reputation in the community. Yeah. So what should we do about all of this? Yeah. You need to explain it to people. You need to explain it to your participants. A lot of times they block about their entire lives, right? Just on the spot. Or they tweet or they text or something. You have to explain no. If people are anonymous and they don't want their identities revealed, you have to make that very clear too. Sometimes usually the advisors to the group talk only to me, the leader, and I would never identify them, and not to the group as a whole, so they don't know who they are. But sometimes you've got a group that prefers to be anonymous, maybe even to each other, but you do have email addresses, right? We got to send someplace. Yeah. But they'd really prefer not to be named for one reason or another. Yeah. So that's something that needs to be respected. And blame will go around if somebody gets outed, and then they have to deny it. Yeah. And then they won't ever work with you again. Because you didn't keep control of your people. You let somebody know who the other person was who wanted to be anonymous. Remember to keep control of yourself as leader too. Yeah, keep the secrets. Make sure that everybody understands that you're the third party impartial and they can tell you anything. It'll be fine, right? Anything. Tell me anything. It's fine. I can keep the secret. I'm the leader. I'm the person who you can trust to be in control. Very, very important. Yes. Mm-hmm. Then what other kind of blame do we have? Oh, we're going to run out of time. You can blame me for the fact that I don't get to the recipes very often. How do I? It's because we have such a wonderful conversation. Yes. And we kind of use up all our time doing that. I'll try to leave room for it next time because the cassoulet and chicken Alfredo have been hanging around for a while to be talked about. Yes, we will get to it. I'll see, maybe. But the other thing that we are talking about, a lot of people are talking about passing of blame, is for something that we hardly ever do. And if we do, it's just temporary. And that's a blame for failure. Sometimes life happens and it just doesn't work out. Yeah, life happens. And it just doesn't work out. Yeah. And who are we going to blame for this failure? Preferably not the leader. I just thought I'd say that. First of all, you have to make it clear that it's not a permanent failure. It's just that the timing was wrong. We need to take a step back and do something first to create the foundation for going forward, right? Yeah. Blame for failure. Janice and others are talking about being rude about the participants to deflect blame. Yeah, sometimes you see that. People get kind of huffy. It's not my fault. It's your fault. You guys all, fill in the blank. Yeah. Ty and others are saying that people pass blame for not working hard enough. And it's, as the leader, it is your responsibility to prevent people from just passing blame, but to find a solution for going forward. It didn't quite work this time. We failed the ballot. We didn't get the vote, for example. But that doesn't mean forever. It means it needs to be approached in a different manner for next time. We're going to revise what we do. We're going to revise our process. We're going to work on what it is that we need to do to get it done this time. Maybe we need to lay down a better foundation with, for example, if it's a vote, the public. And that's good media, right? Media that shows how come something's a good thing and not an evil. Yes, I am going to use marijuana as an example because it's such a good example, right? It had been illegal in the United States for generations. I mean, just forever. And we needed to change people's perception of marijuana use. And how was that done? Yes, exactly. There was a lot of media. There was a lot of talk, a lot of presenting to the public so that they felt comfortable. And the term was coined medical marijuana. Pain relief for sick people. How could that bad thing? Natural pain relief for sick people. Made the inroads, right? Yeah. So, blame for not working hard enough. Diego and others talking about blame for personality differences that caused the team to fail. As leader, we keep track of our teams. We can see if they're not playing well together, and we can reshuffle them, right? Rearrange the team makeup, as Thomas says. Yeah. Yes, Narisa, Nagisa and others are saying that you need to reassess your teams before they reach the blame point. And that's the key to it. You have to keep track. You watch the body language, you listen, you have them report infrequently, because you want to make sure that even if we're not going to progress as far as we thought, that this is not a failure. It's a step in the process. A step in the right direction. Yes, exactly. And in order to do that, you have to actually talk to your people and have them talk to you, right, and to listen and to help over the bumps, because that's what leaders do. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yes, and that's the networking and the food as tool, which Recipe for Peace Now advocates. And we, my friends, are out of time. We'll do the recipes next time, I hope. But we have such a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to connect with us, contact us, send in a question. A lot of times people send in a topic they'd like to hear talked about, and we try to make it the next one if we can, which if you send us enough time, we will. Thank you for being here. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.